Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Action. Indianapolis Colts traveling to San Francisco to play the 49ers. Ryan Radke and Derek Rackley will have all the excitement. And then Monday night, Sean Payton leads his Saints up to Seattle to meet Pete Carroll's Seahawks. Kevin Harlan and the Hall of Famer Kurt Warner will bring you the game, the pregame coverage with NFL Network's Rich Eisen, kicking off 7:30 Eastern on most of these same Westwood One stations. Finally, 1 week from tonight, it's a battle of two NFC heavyweights when Green Bay takes on undefeated Arizona. Log on to WestwoodOneSports.com for more details. Once again, our final score from Cleveland, the Browns 17, the Broncos 14. Tom McCarthy, Mike Golic. I'm John Stashower. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Thursday Night Football on Westwood One.
Alex, obviously Sale had been great through five innings, including the eight-pitch fifth. That said, with him getting to the third time through the order, you know, how much thought had you given to having Brazier warming for the first batter? How much was there debate about having him come out for the sixth? And can you talk about kind of batter by batter through those first four, like including the decision to get to Alvarez?
I mean, he was throwing the ball great. There was some weak contact throughout the night. He was on command. You know, the walk put us in bad place, but then we didn't make a play. Then Bregman hits a comebacker to the pitcher, and then Alvarez hits a hit. You know, sometimes we get caught up too much on third time through the order, you know, and he was throwing the ball great. The stuff was really good. He was throwing 97 with a good slider. I understand, you know, how people think, but you know, there were two lefties coming up, too, in that pocket, right? Brantley, who he did an amazing job early on, and we had Alvarez. Still, he is who he is, but he's Chris Sale. He's a lefty, and, you know, he's made a living getting lefties out. You got to tip your hat to the kid, you know, to the guy. You know, he didn't try to do too much, and on that first pitch, we met a second and third, and he goes the other way. But now, I wasn't even, you know, I was getting ready for the guy next to After Alvarez. We went there and they, you know, put the ball in play. We didn't make plays and that happened.
All right, there was so much to unpack from that game last night that the Red Sox, of course, lost to the Houston Astros as they now trail in this series 3-2. Brian Barrett with you. If you want to join us, what did you make of the manager's decision not only to allow Chris Sale to pitch in that sixth inning, but to allow him to face Yordan Alvarez for the third time in the night? 617-779-7937, the number. So a couple of things here. The biggest issue I have with Alex Cora is really in his postgame press conference, he really dropped the ball because what he said to me made no sense whatsoever from the guy that we've heard after games all season long this year, right? And I've defended Alex Cora on multiple occasions this year for pulling a pitcher earlier on than most people would like him to pull the pitcher, right? I've done it countless times. I did it the other night on Red Sox Review when he pulled Nick Pivetta after five innings. I truly believe that was the right move. Pivetta, if you look at it, yeah, He went five innings. He gave up just the one run, the home run, of course, to Alex Bregman. But if you look at where some of those pitches were, he was basically, he went to the curveball a bit in that fifth inning, but it was a lot of hard stuff. It was a lot of fastballs from Pivetta. That Astros lineup was eventually going to get to Pivetta. He only had three strikeouts. He wasn't missing bats whatsoever. They were eventually going to get to him. And Pivetta's numbers on the season, the third time through, aren't good, right? He has an OPS over 1,000, or I should say an opponent's OPS over 1,000. We can also look back at Tanner Houck this season. How many times did Alex Cora take Tanner Houck out of a game before he faced the lineup the third time through? Because why? Well, his numbers the third time through were not good, right? He had an opponent's OPS of 1,400. I should say north of 1,400. So Alex Cora would take Tanner Houck after he went through the lineup two times. We've seen this happen on countless occasions this season. Heck, you can go back to the wild card game against the Yankees with your best pitcher on the mound, Nathan Eovaldi. Remember, he didn't allow Nathan Eovaldi to face Giancarlo Stanton for a third time, and it actually burned Alex Cora, or I should say it almost burned Alex Cora if it wasn't for Phil Nevin, because remember, he brought in Brazier to face Stanton, and Stanton hits a rocket off the wall that luckily does not go out of the ballpark, and even more of a beneficial thing from a Red Sox perspective was Phil Nevin was the third base coach who has since been fired by the New York Yankees. But remember, he sends Aaron Judge, and Judge is out by, like, I don't know, 10 feet. It wasn't even close, right? So, but the point being, he took Nathan Eovaldi out, and he put Ryan Brazier in. He didn't want Nathan Eovaldi to face Stanton for a third time. Well, how about this Chris Sale situation? Let's go through everything with this. Like, first of all, this is a guy coming back from Tommy John. This is a guy in his previous couple of outings had really struggled. And this is a guy in Chris Sale this season that has an opponent's batting average of .304 the third time through. He has an opponent's on base percentage of .385 the third time through, and he has an opponent's OPS of .819 the third time through. So add all that up, the third time through this season, Chris Sale's not good. The other thing I would mention is this. I feel like Alex Cora, so many times this season, has gone by the numbers, right? And for some inexplicable reason, at the podium last night after the game, he's basically telling you, we get caught up with the third time through too often. Well, you're the guy that always does it, and I applaud him for doing it. He does the right thing. He pulls a pitcher before he starts to fatigue, before he starts to wear down. It's the right thing to do with Pivetta. It's the right thing to do with Houck. But with Chris Sale last night, why didn't you do that? And the explanation is, we get caught up in the numbers too much, and it's Chris Sale. That doesn't make any sense to me. That seemed like a guy that didn't have the answers, right? And what it seemed like to me is a guy for really one of the only times in his postseason career, if you will, that he's really screwed up. I mean, I can only think of a couple of them in terms of the postseason. The other one I would point to is the ninth inning the other night. Yeah, I understand that Nathan Eovaldi gave up the lead, but why are you going to Martin Perez at a one-run game? It's a one-run game. Don't put Martin Perez out there because you still got a chance to win that game or at least tie it up and send it to extra innings, right? But really, if you look at it, throughout Alex Cora's career in the postseason, he's made really good moves. He's made really good decisions. This one made no sense to me whatsoever. First of all, if you listen to what Alex Cora said there, he said he was throwing 97 with a good slider. That was not true in the fifth inning. That was true in the fourth inning, right? If you remember, when Chris Sale had that primal scream, he actually said he left his nuts on the mound. I love that line by Chris Sale. But anyway, just getting back to your original point, you go to that fourth inning. He strikes out Correa and Tucker back-to-back. Now, when he struck out Tucker, he threw his hardest fastball of the season, 98.5 miles an hour. He threw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball to Tucker as well. Okay, but that's the fourth inning. You go to the fifth inning, which it was the right move to bring him back out for the fifth because you got through the tough part of the Astros lineup, if you will, and you were facing the bottom three batters. So in that particular situation for Alex Cora, that's fine. Send it back out there for the fifth, especially considering the fact that those guys are not big threats in that lineup. But what you have to do is observe what was going on when Sale was on the mound. Yeah, he gets out of it because he's not facing great hitters, but he was only throwing 94, 95 mile an hour fastballs in that inning. So Alex Cora says he was throwing 97. Yeah, that was two innings ago. So it makes no sense. The numbers don't tell you to do it. And actually watching the game, right, observing what's in front of you, it tells you not to do it. So really, there's no argument to put Chris Sale back on the mound. whether it's the eye test, if you will, watching the player perform on the mound, or if it's the numbers. Either way, from an analytical perspective or from just an old school gut instinct angle of this, if you will, a baseball angle, just watching the pitcher on the mound, there's no way he should have gone back out there for the sixth inning. But let's push this conversation forward a little bit, right? Don't you think after you saw the Altuve at bat, you would have thought, okay, probably shouldn't leave him out there, because he missed on four balls arm side against Altuve, which tells you one of two things. Either he doesn't want to challenge Altuve, or what's the other possibility? He's fatigued because he's missing to the arm side. So one of those two things is true, and we'll never know from Chris Sale. He's not going to tell you, but either way, you know what the answer is? Both are wrong, or both are bad, I should say. Neither one of those things are good, right? Either he's fatigued or he doesn't want to challenge the batter. And then goodbye Dusty Baker to put on that contact play for Brantley. And then, of course, we all know what happened with Kyle Schwarber. I don't know, catch the ball, man. And then he does get weak contact from Bregman. But then he pitches to Alvarez. And Alex Cora says, well, we like the lefty-lefty matchup. And this is the thing where he just completely loses me. Like, it's almost Kevin Cash-esque where he's defending the decision. It was not the right decision. See, ordinarily with Alex Cora, the process is right. This time, the process was completely flawed. The process made no sense, right? And the whole idea of Alvarez, the lefty-lefty thing, first of all, Alvarez does hit lefties relatively well. He's at 283. He's got, what, like 13 bombs, rather, against lefties. So he does hit lefties well, okay? Not to mention the fact, if Chris Sale has lost velocity on his fastball, which everybody saw last night in the fifth inning, the velocity was down from where it was at in the fourth inning. So here's the thing about Alvarez. He's hit 13 home runs the opposite way this season. And he already hit a home run the opposite way against Sale earlier in the game, and he just missed a home run as well, hitting one off the Green Monster, right? The opposite way, hit a single in that particular instance. That's when Sale got out of that huge jam in the fourth inning. So here's the thing about Alvarez. He will go the opposite way. And secondly, even if he's late, he still has the power, as we all witnessed earlier on in the game in the second inning, that he can hit the ball over the monster, or if he's late, he can hit the ball off the Green Monster as well, right? We saw that from Alvarez in the game. So here's the thing about Alex Cora. I don't understand how he didn't change his process with new information, right? Because it's fine if you look at this game last night and you say, you know what? We actually feel good about Chris Sale pitching against Alvarez. First of all, he's a lefty. Chris Sale dominates lefties. Even this year, when Chris Sale hasn't been the old Chris Sale, he's still been really good against lefties. So, okay, that makes sense. I totally understand where you're coming from if that's your process entering the game. But after you see him hit a ball over the Green Monster, and after you see him hit the ball off the Green Monster, wouldn't your decision-making process alter? Wouldn't it change with the new information, right? Was he not watching the game? That's what I just cannot comprehend whatsoever. This new information was provided to you, right, in terms of this guy's hitting Chris Sale the opposite way. So if his fastball's down from a velocity perspective, what do you think he's going to do? He already, when Chris Sale had his good velocity, hit one over the wall and hit one off the wall. So what do you think's going to happen when Chris Sale's velocity is down a bit? Well, it's going to get even worse for you, and it did, because that basically ended the game. It made it a 3-0 game in that particular instance. So I have no idea what Alex Cora's thought process was there. And quite frankly, I feel like he did a really bad job explaining himself to the media last night. That was really bad. Really bad. And I can't, like, I've defended Alex Cora on so many occasions this year, and I don't think I've really had to defend him, but people disagree with him, as you would say, pulling pitchers prematurely. I don't think he does it. I think he makes the right decision. So I don't really know what he did last night. He didn't go with the numbers. And then secondly, I guess it was just a gut instinct. But okay, if that's your gut, how can your gut say that he's going to be able to pitch to Alvarez? I don't really understand that. And then the other thing I would question, why was nobody up to start the inning? Right? Nobody was up ready to go in the bullpen. The other thing I would mention is this, as it pertains to the pitching situation last night. Does anybody know where the hell Tanner Houck is? Can somebody answer that question for me? Because what I was told, or at least what I was led to believe entering the postseason, and I did believe it, Tanner Houck was supposed to be a weapon out of the bullpen, right? And that's part of the reason I felt like the Red Sox had a chance to make a run deep in this postseason. Remember, I picked them to beat the Rays. I picked them to beat the Astros as well. I felt like Tanner Houck and Nick Pivetta were going to be the X factors for this team from a pitching perspective because they could do multiple roles, right? They could start games, and in the case of Pivetta, more so than Houck, but they could also give you multiple innings out of the bullpen like we saw Tanner Houck do in Game 2 against the Tampa Bay Rays. Now I get his last two outings have not been good, but you're just going away from Tanner Houck? That doesn't make sense to me whatsoever because it felt like from my angle last night, what I thought the plan was going to be, at least during the day, my idea was here's the plan. They are going to give Chris Sale, get us 9 outs, get us 10 outs, get us 11 outs, whatever it is, and then eventually you're going to give it over to Tanner Houck. Now, maybe if it was just 3 2/3, Taylor comes in, say if there is a lefty or something along those lines, or if it's Correa, maybe Brazier comes in for a batter, and then Tanner Houck starts with a clean sheet. Like, that's what I thought the plan was going to be. Sale, maybe 1 out from a different reliever, and then give it off to Houck for an inning or two, but clearly that wasn't the case. And maybe they're spooked by what's happened with Tanner Houck. Remember, he gave up the home run to Altuve. You go back to the Rays series, he gave up the home run to Franco. Maybe they're spooked right now. But I would say this. You're running out of options right now. You have got to use Tanner Houck. I would love to see Tanner Houck back on the mound tomorrow after Nathan Eovaldi. That's what I think the Red Sox should be going back to is Tanner Houck. And now he's had what? The last day he pitched was Friday. So by the time tomorrow rolls around, he basically had a week's worth of rest to get ready for this one. So if they were worried about fatigue, he can't be fatigued anymore. Last time he pitched, he only pitched an inning. He's had a week to recover and get ready for this one. He should be a factor in tomorrow's game. One other thing I want to mention about tomorrow's game, and I truly believe the Red Sox are still in the series because of the fact, if you look at how the pitching is set up on the other side. Now, look, the offense has to produce. And maybe Cora's decisions, yeah, they hurt the team last night clearly, but maybe they just never hit Valdez anyway, right? So maybe that's just the end of the story here is you are going to lose no matter what because they couldn't figure out Valdez. But here's the good news from a Red Sox perspective. Now, obviously, they need to get the offense going. I would take Renfro out of the lineup. He's had 18 plate appearances in this series. You realize in 50% of them, he's either struck out or grounded into a double play. 50% of the time, he's striking out or grounding into double plays. I mean, you almost cannot make that up. So what I would do tomorrow, I put Dahl back at first, see if he can run into one, and I would throw Schwarber out in the outfield. Of course, JD's got a DH because of the foot situation. And, I mean, JD, he's an upgrade, actually, over Schwarber in the field, but I don't think he's going to play JD in the field. But nonetheless, getting back to your original point, Renfro has hurt you defensively. I still contend that he should have made that play in Game 4 against Correa out there in right field, took an awful route to that ball. So I would put Dahl back in there, see if he runs into one. I know his numbers have not been great as of late, but you know that that's a short left field over there. Garcia does not have a powerful fastball. I'd give Dahl back an opportunity tomorrow. The other thing I want to mention in terms of just the matchup in general, that was the Alvarez/Valdez game yesterday. But here's one of the issues the Red Sox are running into. They are getting ambushed. And if you look at it, Alvarez, that home run he hit yesterday was on the first pitch. He now has 8 hits in the series. 5 of them are on the first pitch. So this year, he's hitting .407 with a .419 on base percentage. He slugged .746, rather, and he has an OPS of .1165 on the first pitch. So you have got to be careful with this guy. He is looking to do damage early on in the count. Now, the same thing could be said in some sense with Altuve. Altuve is a guy that we know only has 3 hits of the series, but 2 of them are home runs. One off Whitlock, 1 off Tanner Houck. And guess what? They've both come on the first pitch. This season on the first pitch, .321 average, .863 OPS, 5 home runs. So these two guys, they have got to be careful with them early on in the count. Alvarez and Altuve are up there looking to do damage early on in the count, so they got to be careful with that. But I do feel like the Red Sox are in a good position. Garcia is going to go for them tomorrow. He's been dealing with an injury. And then they have Urquidy. And then they have Odorizzi. Like, that guy is going to be coming in for a bulk situation. Now, that bullpen has been tough on the Red Sox. 29 1/3 innings for that Astros bullpen. They've given up just 8 earned runs. And 4 of those are off Odorizzi, right? Remember, Odorizzi came into that game, too. So, really, you've scored 4 runs off their real relievers. So, the Red Sox have got to show some ability to get after those relievers because they haven't thus far. But from a pitching perspective, the Red Sox are set up much better than the Astros. But this offense that carried you to your 2 wins. I shouldn't say carried you to your 2 wins because Erod was really good when he started in Game 3, and so was Nathan Eovaldi in his start in Game 2. So I shouldn't say it that way, but your offense was able to make sure that those games weren't close, and that's the offense you need to show back up tomorrow. Now, I do want to get to the Patriots for a second here because I thought this was interesting today. Michael Irvin was on with Gresham Keefe, does a weekly spot with those guys. Actually, I think he's a very entertaining interview each and every week, but Nonetheless, he was asked about Bill Belichick not going for more fourth downs.
Offensively, the Patriots have been pretty conservative, and I don't just mean like not chucking the ball downfield, but they never go for it on fourth down. And there was a few chances in the game against Dallas where fourth and two, three, maybe they could have gone for it. Why? What do you think of that approach, at least this far in the season, with a rookie quarterback?
Well, Bill's going to do Bill. You see these young guys, they're going for it on fourth down all over the place. All these young coaches, you know, working on these analytics and all of that. But Bill is going to be Bill. And I find it hard to question what he does. I know you guys out there saying, oh, fourth down, fourth. I just find it hard to question. Last week, they were getting on Coach in Dallas saying he's not going for it on fourth down. When he had those fourth and ones, you know. Everybody, especially fans, especially we look across the league and we see other people doing it. Like, hey, man, we're going to go for some of these fourth downs. So now it becomes more prevalent, and everybody's expecting everybody to do it, and sometimes it's not always wise. That first fourth down Dallas went for?
Yeah.
I was like, well, what are you doing there?
Right.
You know, this is about to be a dirty game. 3 points is big. Let's punt this ball. Because right there, when you give it to them, that's 3 points automatic. Right there, let's punt this ball and keep playing football, you know. And I was upset, but they won the game, so it came out of it. You know, wins wipe that stuff away. But, yeah, it's funny now in this league with these fourth down, and people are going for it all the time.
All right, so a couple of things that Michael Irvin said there. So, first of all, he said a lot of people were questioning Mike McCarthy's decision-making, to paraphrase what he's saying they should be. I mean, Mike McCarthy almost lost that game for the Cowboys. He was atrocious in that game. How about at the end? I still don't understand what he was doing. Why did he wait to take the timeout at the end of the fourth quarter? He let it go down to 3 seconds, and then he called the timeout. I have no idea what the hell he was doing at the end of the fourth quarter. And I still haven't gotten an explanation for what the hell he was thinking. I have no idea. But anyway, getting back to his point about Michael Irvin saying he's not going to question Bill Belichick, rather, because he's Bill, and he referenced all these younger coaches going for it. Well, I don't like the fact that Bill Belichick's not aggressive whatsoever. So you look at that game, right? So at the end of the first half, and I remember I'm going nuts watching this game. I should remember. It was like less than a week ago. But anyway, getting back to the original point. So the Patriots are up 14-10. And Dak Prescott goes in, and it appears he has a touchdown, but what happens? Juwan Bentley made his only play like in the history of his Patriots career, right? He punches it out of Dak Prescott's hands. Okay, great. So you're up 14-10. You get the ball at the 20, and there's 90 seconds left before halftime after that Dak fumble. That's a huge momentum swing, right? Because it appears the Cowboys are going to go into halftime with the lead, first of all, but secondly, you have the ball back. Well, hold on. What happens when the Patriots get the ball back with a minute and 30 seconds left? Do you remember? Mac Jones, first of all, Damian Harris off left tackle. See if you pop one. That's like what everybody likes to do to start that off, right? But then what does Mac Jones do? And not that it's his decision. They kneel twice. You had a minute and 30 seconds left before halftime. So, first of all, that sends an awful message to the offense, right? Like, we have no confidence you guys can move the ball whatsoever. We think you're going to get a three and out here, and we're going to have to punt it back to them, and we don't want to do that, right? So, from my perspective, you're playing scared. And you have an opportunity to go down the field with 90 seconds left to try to put more points on the board. You're up 14-10. You know on the other side, that's one of the best offenses in the NFL. You're going to have to score more points in this game to win. You're going to have to outscore them from a shootout perspective, right? You're going to have to put up 34 points to beat this team, right? You're not going to beat the Dallas Cowboys winning 17-10, or heck, even winning 21-17. You got to go north of 30 to beat this team. This is a big opportunity to be able to do that. Not to mention, it helps your defense. You score there and you go up, say, 21-10. Okay, well, then Dallas is altering how they play, and you know they have to pass the ball. Now, they're a great passing team, but making them more one-dimensional is advantageous to not only your offense, but your defense, right? So that's a dumbass decision from Bill Belichick's perspective. And I feel like so far this year, he's made a lot of them in terms of time and situation. What are you doing before halftime against the Bucs, punting it back to them? Go for it. It's fourth and one. That decision makes no sense to me whatsoever, nor does the one at the end of the game where he's kicking a field goal with Nick Folk north of 50. He never hits north of 50. And then what's the other part of the equation? Well, even if you make that, what happens? You kick the ball back to Tom Brady. He has two timeouts, and a minute left in the game. So I don't understand what Bill Belichick's doing from a tactical standpoint, a strategic standpoint in these games. The math is not on Bill's side right now. He is not making good decisions in terms of clock management, which is something I never thought I'd say with Bill. Ordinarily, he's been really good. Like, I defend his move years ago going for it on 4th-and-2 because you know if you give the ball back to Peyton Manning, he's winning that game. Well, in this case, Bill doesn't take any chances whatsoever. It's actually quite frustrating. Now, another thing I'd mention real quickly here is the Mac Jones situation. I don't understand why they're not making life more easier for him. And I feel like Mac's been one of the bright spots for this team this season, quite frankly. Him, Matthew Judon, Duggar's had a really good season. But anyway, I don't want to get through all the guys that are having a decent season. As it pertains to Mac, do you know that he has 7 pass attempts this year out of RPOs? That's 24th in the league. And he said, well, he's not an RPO quarterback. Well, he was at Bama. 19% of his passing attempts at Alabama last year came out of RPOs. So why not take some of the low-hanging fruit? Those are easy opportunities, right? Especially for a team right now that is struggling to run the football, right? They're 27th in rushing yards per game. They're 25th in yards per attempt. Well, how about take some of the low-hanging fruit? Those quick decisions. Mac's a really good decision-maker, right? So why not make it easier for him? Quick decisions. Either you're running the ball with Damian Harris or you're getting the ball right out to one of your tight ends. Like, those are really easy decisions for young quarterbacks. And Mac's already ahead of the curve in terms of processing defenses and all that different type of stuff. But what I would say in terms of Josh McDaniels, they got to make better decisions in terms of getting him easy opportunities. Thanks to Justin for producing. I'm back with you after the Red Sox tomorrow.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.